In the late 90s, poker exploded because suddenly you could play it online. You could gamble on poker anywhere, anytime, for real money. And forget about going to Vegas. There were people making a living playing online poker at home in their pajamas. But then came Black Friday. April 15th, 2011, the day the federal government shut down the top three online poker gambling sites. They froze accounts, indicted executives, sent some of them to jail. And all those people who were making a living playing poker had to find something else to do. But here's the thing. Remember I said we're talking about skill versus luck? Well, the law that shut down internet gambling, it's called the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, that law has a loophole. It turns out it's not all internet gambling that's against the law. It's wagering on games that are subject to chance. And game designer, actually gaming legend, Jason Rohrer, took this loophole as a challenge.
I looked at the law and I read all the text of it. I was like, oh, so what if we could make a game that is not subject to chance that people would still feel like, hey, this is a game I might actually gamble on, right? Sort of threading through the loophole in the law perfectly at the same time making a game that was a compelling gambling game.
Okay, so what'd you come up with?
So I realized that, okay, so we can't have any random number generators. We can't have rolling dice. We can't have cards. We can't have a computer picking numbers out of a hat in any way, right?
Because that would be chance.
That would be chance. You can't do that. So you still need to have hidden information, right? You can't gamble and bet on something if both players know exactly what the state of the game is. So the hidden information has to come from the players. So my new game is called Cordial Minuet. There's a grid of numbers. It's a 6x6 grid. It looks pretty much like a bingo card with numbers from 1 to 36 kind of arranged in a pattern. Now, instead of bingo where, you know, you pull a ball out of a hopper and tell which number has been picked, the players are picking the numbers. One player is picking columns on the grid and the other is picking rows. And they're doing this in secret. And then those columns intersect after each turn, giving each player a number, one of the numbers from 1 to 36 that adds into their score. But as the columns get removed from the grid, there's more and more information appearing about what your opponent may have gotten on the first turn, on the second turn, and then finally on the third turn. And that's what you're betting on along the way.
So it's a little bit like Battleship.
It is a little bit. Yeah, you're like saying like E5, essentially. But your opponent doesn't know that you picked E5.
So, Jason, you said you had to create a game that was all skill, no chance. So there's no chance in this. Everything is under the control of the players. But what's the skill? What do you need to do well to win?
What you need to do well to win in this game is to learn to read your opponent's mind. And even if you've never played against them before, you can look at it and say, well, if I was them, what row would be attractive to me? What am I? What would I pick if I was them?
But this is online. So you're playing a perfect stranger and you can't even see them.
You can't even see them. And there's no chat. There's no other communication outside of the game, the communication that takes place through the game itself.
So the original point of this game was to exploit this loophole in the law so that you could create an online game that people could gamble real money for. But what's the point for you of the gambling real money? I mean, all the other games online that are really popular, you can gamble and play, but for virtual currency, you know, virtual gold, virtual jewels, or whatever.
Right. And in this game, you can only play for real money, right? So I allow people to play all the way down to a penny, where, like, each player puts a penny into the game and you're fighting over fractions of a penny. Because I found that, you know, when I was playing poker for real money, it kind of brought the drama and the real-life impact of the game to like a very different level than what I was experiencing in games where the consequences weren't real. And I really like games that somehow reach out into the real world and kind of affect the real world in some way.
Well, the other thing is the fact that it's real money, I assume, means that in order to play the game, people have to give you their credit card information.
Right, right.
That's the point at which it feels real.
Yeah. You come to this website, and then you load the game up, and then the first thing it shows you is, here, enter your credit card, and tell me how much, you know, money you want to deposit. You can deposit anywhere from $2, which is the bare minimum, all the way up to $999,000. I mean, assuming that your credit card limit goes that high.
What's the highest stake anybody's played for?
There was a one point in time a couple of months ago where a self-described .com millionaire came into the game. He had played some of my games in the past, and I've actually gotten to know him over the years. It's kind of an interesting story because he started off playing, you know, a $5 game and lost. And then the players he was playing against, who were established and good, were willing to follow him up. He then played a $10 game, and they joined him. And then he lost that and went up to 20, then 50, then 100. He kept losing on purpose. Then he got up to $500 games. And he was like, now I'm playing for real stakes that I care about. I've lured these people up. And then he tried to start playing for real and, of course, still didn't know how to play. So over the course of a couple of days, he lost something like $6,000, mostly to one person, who was this college kid who had like never gambled before and just had put $15 into the game or whatever. And all of a sudden, he's sitting on like $6,000, and he's like, "Whoa, what happened to me here?"
So I want to ask you about the design of the game. So you said it looks a little bit like a bingo board. But I have to say, looking at it, what it actually looks like is a bingo board created by medieval monks, because it's
right. It's
got all these weird arcane symbols on the side. In fact, the entire site, frankly, looks a little sketchy. So why?
Yeah, so when I set out to make this game, I started reading the history of gambling, right? And I found that there's this intimate connection between gambling and fortune-telling and religion and the occult, people rolling the bones to commune with the gods or do fortune-telling and then using the same bones on the weekends to gamble with. And, even if you think about like a modern casino, it's kind of like a giant cathedral. And one of my game designer friends likes to say it's like, this temple where we go to sacrifice a bit of our hard-earned money on the altars of the gods of chaos, right? So anyway, I decided that I wanted to make a game that was both an occult ritual and a gambling game kind of rolled into one. And so that grid of numbers that you see that looks like a bingo card is actually a magic square. This is an ancient numerical device that's part of numerology and magic rituals that goes way back. I mean, you can find magic squares carved into some of the most ancient temples in the world.
Wait, what makes something a magic square?
So a magic square is a grid of numbers, and they're arranged in such a way where each row and each column sums to the same amount, and each diagonal. But if you think about it, I've got six rows, and each row sums to 111. So that is actually where the number 666 comes from, is from the 6x6 magic square. And when I was sitting down with that magic square and just testing it for gameplay purposes, and I added the numbers up in my calculator, and I saw that come up on the screen, I was like, oh my God, I was sitting at my kitchen table, and I just slapped my forehead. I was like, this is it, right?
Jason, the thing that really fascinates me is that going back to this theme of luck versus skill or chance versus skill, I was kind of thinking that maybe that's what makes a game a game. That you've got both some skill and some chance involved, and maybe even in equal amounts.
Right, right. Well, a lot of people in the world of board games and other kinds of games kind of turn their nose up at games of chance, right? Like if you go all the way down in the ladder, you get to a game like Candyland, the children's game, where you turn over a card, it tells you how far to move, and the game just plays itself based on what cards turn over, and you have no choices to make at all. And a lot of people scoff at that.
So is that why that game is so boring?
Yeah, there's absolutely no skill, there's no choices to make. On the other end of the spectrum is a game like chess or a game like Go. The game doesn't play itself at all, and you're sitting there kind of like just, oh, it's raw brain power against raw brain power. Whoever can kind of think deeper into this gigantic tree of possibilities.
So there's no chance. It's all skill. But on the other hand, I'm not sure I'd say it's fun.
I would describe chess as a dry game as a game designer. And it's not something that people play for laughs, really, I guess. So kind of in the middle is this perfect sweet spot, right? And this is the spot where games like poker, games that actually have a huge amount of cultural currency reside, including most sports, right? I mean, the sports have this enormous element of skill, right? Like how fast can you pitch a ball? How accurate can you pitch it? But when someone goes to swing at that ball, there's a ton of chaos involved there in terms of exactly where the ball is going to go and how far it's going to go and what angle it's going to fly at and so on.
Mm.
So these things that really excite us and that create these moments that are sort of once-in-a-lifetime moments. When you play poker and you, every once in a while, every, 200 and so hands, you get dealt two aces in Texas Hold'em. I mean, it really feels like you turn up those little cards on the table, those little pieces of paper, and there's two A's staring back at you. And it feels like, all the universe has swirled around you just for that moment to bless you with this amazing thing.
You just won the cosmic lottery.
Yeah. And so those kinds of experiences, those, oh my gosh, I can't believe this just happened to me, or oh my gosh, I can't believe he made that shot in basketball, when there's so much butterfly effect from the moment he like touches the ball to when he releases it out of his hand. Those moments are moments that, sort of go down in history as these legendary things, in part because there's so much chaos.
Do you think of a game as a metaphor for life? Because I was thinking that interplay between randomness, chance, and skill, to a certain extent, that's what life is, right?
Right, right. So yeah, I guess you know, games are these microcosms, like almost like little worlds, right, where the sort of laws of the universe are very well defined and known to us. If you think of a game of, you know, baseball or soccer or American football, you know, there's a sort of beginning and a middle and end. There's this time clock running. There's these other elements, and you're trying to sort of chart your way through it in a way that puts you in a victorious position, where we kind of know what victory even means, right? Get more runs in the opponent team by the end of the ninth inning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in real life, we kind of know the rules, maybe, but not really. Yeah, and we don't know what the victory condition is.
It's a game, but we don't know what it means to win.
Yeah, like I guess we like to sort of operate in these, people call it in the game design world, they call it the magic circle, right? Where you step into the circle and everything's very well-defined and there's certain rules of behavior inside that circle. And it's also really interesting how much things count inside that circle, right? I mean, you sit down at a game of poker, and you lose, and your $300 or whatever it is gone. You don't say, hey, man, it was just a game. Can I have my money back? In fact, you know, there's all these great stories from history of how much someone has lost in a poker game and how they stuck to it, right? Like my dad's town growing up, someone lost a house in a poker game. Errol Flynn had an island he was going to build a resort on. He lost it in a poker game, right? I mean, there's...
And people pay up. They don't say, no, it was just a game. You can't have my island.
Yeah. No, come on, man. Oh, it was just a joke. No. We lost it at a game. It's fair and square, and we believe in it. It's like, it is like this kind of law that we will not violate once we've stepped into that circle, right?
Jason Rohrer is one of the top game designers in the world. He's designed first-person shooters, adventure games, and games so conceptual, one is in the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art. Oh, and also a game made of titanium that's buried somewhere in the Nevada desert and is so futuristic, nobody alive can play it. But what you can play and gamble on for real money is his new game. It's called Cordial Minuet, and if you visit our website, Jason will teach you how to play it at ttbook.org.